episode of CalHQ brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Olivia Amundson, CalCat Field Specialist based out of the Sioux Falls Regional Office. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about winter bowl management with Andrew Snyder and Julie Walker. Andrew, why don't you give us a quick introduction?
Hi, thanks for having me. I am Andrew Snyder. I am fourth generation rancher. We ranch just between Sturgis and Rapid City. Full-time on the ranch is my dad, my brother Daniel, and myself. And then the rest of our family helps on the heavier days when we have a lot of cattle work to do.
Thank you. And we also have Julie Walker. Julie, would you give us a quicker introduction as well?
Sure. So I'm Dr. Julie Walker, and I'm the Extension Beef Specialist, and I work in Brookings, and so I work with cow-calf and side of the production.
Thanks, Julie. I also have my coworker here, Kiernan Brandt. Kiernan, why don't you just give your traditional hello?
Yeah, technical expertise today behind the mic. But yeah, Kiernan Brandt, other cow-calf field specialist based out of the Watertown office.
All right, we're happy to have you guys all here today. So, like I said, we're going to be talking about winter bowl management. And so let's just, I guess, jump right into the conversation. And Andrew, I'm probably going to pick on you first. Tell us a little bit about your operation and how you manage your bulls.
Sure. Well, typically, we are a little bit non-traditional where we background our own calves. We'll retain ownership of our steers and feed them out and sell them directly to the packer. We also will grow our own replacement heifers and market them typically locally to neighbors and others who need some replacement heifers. So we are trying to, and then that way we can also return those genetics back into our herd. On our on the feeding side, we pretty much feed out anything that we can, open heifers, steers. We'll do some grass steers, and we can trace those through and get good data back from the packer, and so we can follow very accurately through what our genetics are doing to our cow herd. And the bulls come in, obviously, huge in that, and being able to and taking care of your bulls is extremely important in the whole circle that the ranching cycle goes through every year.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you guys have a lot going on, and genetics plays a huge role in a lot of that. So how do you, or what do you genetically select your bulls for?
Well, obviously the mother cow is huge, and having a cow that can withstand the environment that we put them through. And what I mean when I say that is that a lot of our cows end up grazing in the Black Hills National Forest. This was actually our 75th year grazing in the Runkle grazing allotment of the Black Hills National Forest.
Wow.
So those cows are, we expect a lot from them, and we expect them to move. We expect them to graze efficiently and obviously raise a calf, rebreed at the same time. So they do get put through their paces on what we expect them to do. For example, in the permit that's right behind our house, it's approximately 3.5 miles wide and about 7 miles long, and it's about a 6.5 mile journey for those calves to get there. So it's a very rigorous journey, and obviously having a cow that can make that and having sound feet and legs and being able to move themselves throughout the forest all summer is a major thing for us, and especially on the bull side also.
Yeah, so it sounds like feet and legs is definitely, that's something that is important. And being in South Dakota, obviously we go through different season changes. And so we discussed that we're going to talk about winter bull management.
Sure.
I guess in those terms, you know, once you pull the bulls off at the end of the breeding season, kind of walk us through how you manage those bulls.
So our bulls will, when we pull them, which is again going to the because of the forest scenario, we breed early. So these bulls are getting pulled about the first of second week in July. So they spend the rest of the summer on grass, and then we try and graze them absolutely as long as we can. And they're still out grazing right now, and we're starting to roll them a few licked barrels as their manure patties change, and just kind of watch them and try and just watch their body condition. And this isn't, these are not my words, I've gotten them from somebody else, but you know, bulls are one of those things that sometimes the producer forgets about them for part of the winter. And you know, we're doing all sorts of things, and we don't do any row crop, but you know, guys are harvesting, they're moving grain, they're doing all the fall things. And for us, you know, it's shots and it's weaning and getting the calves healthy and then getting to the feedlot and, you know, so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, you know, rolls around, then you're calving, and then you really forget about them. And so, you know, granted, they're getting fed every day during the winter once they're out of pasture, but bulls can be something that you inadvertently and accidentally forget about a little bit on their body condition score side. And so I think it's very important to keep a good forage supply in front of those bulls. And there's, you know, you can pick your host of what you would like to do, whether it's lick tubs or cake or distillers or whatever. A lot of times what we do is we'll feed them hay, and then they'll get a good lick barrel. And right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what we tend to do, and get them ready. And it's amazing once you get into the springtime and you get that pop of green grass, how much, you know, they really do shine up, and they look really nice in the springtime.
And kind of like we chatted about earlier, some guys, especially when chores start to pile up, have a habit of letting those bulls kind of slip by, and then all of a sudden it's 6 weeks out from the time you need them, or the time you at least need them BSE'd, and if you've neglected them, you can be quite a ways up a creek at that point. So, you know, I'm actually going to digress a little bit and put Dr. Walker on the spot here, and maybe have her talk a little bit through just the technical side of assessing protein and assessing adequate nutrition through manure as we go through some of these seasons.
Okay, so the reality is bulls are often the neglected animals on their operation, but the reality of that is we can allow that to happen just due to the fact that I don't want to say they work a short season, but typically it's about 90 days, 60 to 90 days. And so that is a relatively short season when we look at the whole year. So when we look at nutrition, we seriously have to think about, are those still a growing bull? So are they like, they were yearling bull and now they're coming into their first winter, so they're 18 months, they're still growing. So their nutritional needs are going to be much higher than that 3 or 4 year old bull out there that you might have that isn't growing any longer. And so when we evaluate those nutritional needs, we just need to really look at what those nutritional needs are, because the protein requirements for that younger bull will be higher than that of the older bull. And so we need to look at that. So Kiernan, you suggested looking at the manure. I really can't tell anything by the manure. I know there's a lot of wives' tales that, and yes, there's some truth to this. If they're higher in protein, typically there'll be a looser patty versus a harder one. But that typically has to do with fiber more than protein. And so let's not measure manure. But if we really hay test or do feed analysis, run it through a program, we can have a really good measure of exactly what we're putting in front of those. And as Andrew said, you know, they have their bulls out on pasture. And if we pull those bulls away from the cows and put them in a pasture so they're not bothered by the potential of a cow in heat, because if they're across the road or across the fence from the cows, they're still interested. And so we need to kind of stick them in a corner, per se, where there's no cows around. And they'll graze. They'll add that condition they need. Ideally, we'd like them coming out of into spring, into the breeding season, about a body condition score 6. And so when we think about that, you certainly want to evaluate your bulls probably 90 days earlier or 120 days earlier to make sure they're in the body condition. And that will tell you a lot where you're at. The other thing is how you manage those bulls beyond nutrition is, do you group them all together? And if you do, Are you prepared to have a big enough pen so the underdog has a place to go hide from the king dog or the head bull in this, because there's going to be a pecking order within those bulls, and so to eliminate injuries in those winter times, because when you get to the BSEs, you may not have the performance you want. They won't pass their fertility test, and then you have a lot of money invested in a bull and you're not able to get the offspring you want from that. So I think the really key things when we think about winter management is that feed, as well as making sure we have a pen for them. And also, Andrew said, you know, they're out on pasture. That physical activity is critical for those bulls. You put them in a small pen, they get kind of fat, they get over-conditioned, they're not ready to do the marathon following the cows around the pasture, that kind of stuff in the spring. And so I think that becomes critical.
Well, and that's something we have to be really aware of in terms of transitioning them and their level of exercise, because their nutritional requirements will change along with that level of activity, right? Same as an active runner versus a couch potato.
Yeah. And so you totally got that. If you're running marathons, you better eat a little bit more than an 8-to-5 worker, come home, sit on the couch for the next 6 hours or 8 hours. Their nutritional needs, those bulls are the same way. And that's why we want them in a body condition score 6. So maybe if they're not, how do I put this politically correct? So let's say the bulls have one job, is to service those cows. And so they're going to get interested in those cows. They're going to blow off eating. So we need to have some condition on those cows so that they can lose some. And we don't have them in a negative energy condition that could impact the sperm quality.
Well, even being in an over-conditioned state of quality can affect sperm quality as well, because the fat deposition within the scrotum is going to have effects too.
Yeah, that is 100% correct. So that's why we don't want them. Yes, we say a body condition 6, and everyone's 6 seems to be slightly different, but we certainly don't want them to start getting pudgy looking or that finished steer ready to go to market. And so you don't want it in that status.
Yeah, absolutely. So nutrition is huge. Julie, you brought up another really good point on BSEs,
Breeding soundness exam.
Sorry, we're talking body condition scores. Here I am. And actually, my question is directed towards Andrew. Andrew, do you guys do BSEs on your bulls?
Absolutely. And that's another thing that I think sometimes gets overlooked. And a lot of times when there is a fertility issue within a group of cows or a particular pasture, it's blamed on the cows. You know, the cows did this, they did that, you know, something was wrong, something, whatever. But, you know, maybe it was a bull issue, and maybe you need to look at that also. And did you test them? Did you not test them? You know, did he get hurt afterwards? You know, there's a multitude of different things that, happen. Bulls are incredibly frustrating. They're nobody's favorite, and they just continuously cause problems. And so, there's always something on the bull side. You know, talking about exercise. So we have a very unique bull pasture, and it's in between the I-90 interstate and the railroad, and it's a long, skinny pasture. They're shoved in there, and it's not huge, but they got 100 acres or so that they can get around in, and we feed them in there and we unroll bales. So I feel that the injury issue isn't quite as much, because when you unroll that bale, you're going several hundred feet and you can move that feed around, and each one of them, they line up like they're at a feed bunk, but there's 25 feet between each one of them, because that's what they do. And so I think that probably aids in possibly less injury issues during the feeding process. They also have to move quite a ways to water. They end up getting a fair bit of exercise throughout the winter. So that's probably very helpful also.
You mentioned some national forest leases. Mm-hmm. Are those mixed pastures with other lease lessees?
There is one permit that we have that is. So yes, they are mixed. They're mixed with, and so, you know, we turn out X number of bulls, the others turn out X number of bulls, and that's very non-typical within the Black Hills National Forest to be that way. Most of them are, you know, one owner for each allotment.
Interesting. I'm curious. The only reason I ask, that's very common. I'm not sure this has come out on the podcast yet, but I'm a Wyoming transplant, mm-hmm. and that's pretty common down on some of those bigger BLM grazing allotments.
Sure.
I was just curious of your general philosophy regarding herd health in a situation like that where you don't have control over maybe some of the other bulls coming in.
Right. Well, generally, I would say that when we turn out, you know, the second week in June or so, most of our cows have been pretty well exposed. You know, obviously, there's going to be a few lagging. The other thing is that cows, it's amazing when you have a commingled permit, they really tend to spend the first part of their summer in the group that you brought them up there with. They don't tend to mix near as much. And I don't know why, but that's kind of what they do. And so I would say that as a whole, it's not a huge issue because of when we calve, when we turn bulls out, and that's unique to us, I guess.
And Andrew, so kind of going back on the breeding soundness exams, and yeah. maybe for some of our listeners who aren't extremely familiar with those, when would you BSE your bulls prior to the breeding season?
Sure. Well, there's a couple trains of thought on that. The first is that you bring them over and you test them the day you're ready to turn out, because then it's only busting up your krell once. But that's probably not Julie's got her hand.
Julie's shaking her head.
Yeah. So that's probably not the best. But typically we'll be several weeks out, and that way it gives you a chance to purchase additional bulls if you need to, get rid of the ones that aren't good, and it gives you the ability that when you bring them back to turn them out with the cows, you can retest the ones that didn't pass. And a lot of times, or else, you know, the veterinary will say, well, you know, let him get out, let him service a few more cows, and we'll pull him in. We'll pull him in and retest him. So we'll keep that one close by and try and retest him if that's the case.
Yep. So Andrew brought up a really good point about, you know, going a little bit farther out prior to the breeding season before those bulls are actually going out with those cows so that they could retest. And I think that's an important point because bulls go through something known as spermatogenesis, and it's about a 61-day cycle. And so what that means is if one of these bulls maybe does have a negative test that comes back, that bull will go through spermatogenesis, and we can retest that bull, and he may have adequate sperm at that time. So it is important that if we are thinking about BSEs, that we do push it out far enough so that if we do have some of those bulls that didn't meet their requirements, that we can retest them so we're not necessarily culling a potentially good bull or having to think about buying another bull. So that's a really good point, Andrew. The other thing I was thinking about, again, you know, in our multiple climate state that we have, thinking about colder weather and maybe injury to those scrotums. Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of that, or what are some of the things that you do to reduce some of that injury?
We just don't see a whole lot of that. Every few years, it seems like the vet will say, you know, this one's got a little scab on the bottom of the scrotum or something like that. But, and I can't say exactly why, but mm-hmm. we personally don't deal with a whole lot of that. Partly is probably because of the pasture there's in, there's lots of cover. They have trees to get into when it's nasty and cold. And so that's probably a lot of it.
Right. And so I'm going to turn this question then back to Julie. So Julie, you work largely on the east side of the state, and we know that there's large differences when it comes to bull management, cow management in general. Do we see these sort of situations on the east side of the state?
You mean
scrotal
thing. So one of the biggest things with what we see on the eastern part of the state, and we all see it on the western part of the state too, particularly if it gets an extremely cold winter, that becomes a huge issue with frostbite. And so, and the other thing is if they have to lay in wet, the scrotum's right there. That's the first thing to hit the ground kind of scenario. I don't know if that's the correct way to put that, but so as that scrotum's on the ground, it potentially, if it's wet, cold, those things, higher risk of frostbite. And so I've seen the Snyder pasture, you know, there's no really wet spots in it, you know, and so I think that's where they're not seeing those issues, and so they're blessed within that. Typically, Rapid City has usually milder conditions than East River, and so those have issues. So a lot of the East River guys will ensure that there's bedding, they've got dry bedding, those kind of things to avoid those issues, because frost damage, those kind of scrotum damage, you can have a really good bull and just be really disappointed because they need that time to heal, recover, those kind of things, and you may miss a breeding season with them.
Absolutely. It's just crazy how there's such large differences from one side of the state to the other side of the state.
Yeah, but I think the principles are the same, you know, because if we were dry on the eastern part of the state, those kind of things, because I really think a lot of it has to do with the moisture, because typically what we see is when they get in a muddy situation or smaller pans or those things where I'll hear those issues or, you know, super negative conditions that we can't control. But other than that, it's usually management things where, and I think it has to do too if they're in a small pen versus out on pasture. And so, because a lot of guys will like have their cows out on pasture, so they might have them in a smaller pen or those kind of things where they'll have a wet spot or a low spot or something, and then they just run into those kind of scenarios.
Yeah, so really just going back to managing those bulls maybe in their own group, but making sure they have enough room to walk around and navigate.
Yeah, and the other thing too is I think about a lot of guys need, okay, the Snyders probably have all those running together, but I typically would say having those younger bulls run together versus the big bulls running together, the old boys, just due to the fact that the nutritional requirements of those young bulls are higher, and those big older bulls don't need that. So all they're going to do is get fat, and so we don't want that. And so I think it's kind of critically that when we think about that, if we can have two different areas, that will help alleviate some of the issues with those younger bulls or not having enough nutrients, because those older bulls will get their pick first, typically. And they don't need those extra calories, and those young bulls do. And so who's getting what? So by splitting them off, then you. The other thing is, you know, going into winter, if you have thin bulls, it's easier to do it early versus when it gets colder.
Yeah, absolutely.
That brings up a really good point, actually. I wasn't sure I was going to get a chance to talk about it, but that was one of the reasons I was really excited to hear that we were having you on today. And going to be the area that we were covering is just some of the research that we're seeing now. My former mentor down in Tennessee is seeing some really exaggerated differences based on kind of that line of thought is, if bulls come off skinny and we forget about them until that 6 weeks right before the breeding season and try and put some condition back on them, we may have the feed resources to do that. We're going to pay for it for sure, but they're looking at a super specific immunological kind of cytokine response to that nutritional stress and the additional strain that those nutrients are causing, just because they're not acclimated to that diet and that they're going through such a rapid transition in body weight, and they're noticing some exaggerated differences. So a lot of these things really do make sense from that perspective, is when we're stressing the body, putting it through these dramatic changes and not allowing that steady state and that maintenance or just a slightly positive plane of nutrition, we can really kind of throw the body into shock, throw the scrotum into shock, and have some stuff get out of whack. And it's really easy to see how, like Olivia said, like you've said throughout this, you can have a bull that might have even tested good before, something can change that may have just been a simple I forgot, and it can go haywire very fast.
But I also think that brings up a good point that it might not even be something that's related to the weather or even maybe it could be related to sickness or disease, but really thinking about the inflammatory system and these cytokines and how it's actually affecting spermatogenesis. So,
well, Andrew, thanks a bunch for being here with us today. We sure do appreciate it. If you ever have any desire to come back and do another one, send us a topic, and we'll definitely make it happen.
Sure. Well, thank you for asking me, and very good.
And we thank Julie for being here as well. She skedaddled on us, but that's all right. So thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Cattle HQ, and we'll see you next time.